This is Inspired Artist Podcast with me, Sirgun Kaur. In this episode, I get to talk with the beautiful Brenda McMorrow, who is a Canadian mantra artist. Each year, Brenda leads a retreat called the Bhakti Pilgrimage in February in India. And in this episode, we get to talk about the gift of crowdsourcing. We talk a little bit about her history and how she found the spiritual path and mantra, how she overcame her resistance to the repetitive nature of this genre, which is a really cute story. She teaches a yearly course on mantra. All of this you can find out more about at brendamcmorrow.com. There's a link in the description box. I'm also going to play a little bit of her track, Falling Away, which we discuss in the podcast, which was extremely significant to me and I'm sure will resonate with so many people who hear it. It's about allowing the parts of ourselves that are no longer necessary to fall away, like the leaves in autumn. So let's do this. How are you?
I'm doing great. I am. So I actually caught your new single the other day because Falling. Is that maybe not the single that you're releasing?
Or I just released a whole album.
Right. So I assumed that that was like your single, I guess, because it was on this playlist, but that was my interpretation.
Maybe. Yeah, no, it's kind of just one of them.
So. One of many. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, I heard it because one of my favorite playlists is that Mantras Reiki.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I saw that you're on there too, which is great.
Yeah,
I
haven't. She's really sweet about adding stuff.
Yeah, I haven't heard the playlist yet. I looked. And I want to start just listening to it whenever I'm doing stuff. And do you have a new album out as well, like recently, or?
I'm releasing more singles lately. So okay. I released a single a couple weeks ago, and then a couple weeks before that, and then like before the summer.
Yeah. So instead of doing it at a disc, like you're not.
Well, I did release an album before the summer, which was a sound healing album called For Pamela with my friend Joshua Stoddard.
Oh,
yeah, and that's we made that into a physical CD. How do you feel about the whole physical CD thing? Like, are you still printing physical CDs?
Yes, so I am. It's an interesting transition time, though, for sure. I decided to do it. This is actually my first Kirtan album that I'm doing independently. Well, I have mm-hmm. White Swan is distributing, but they had put out all my other ones, but I decided to do this one on my own, you know, to perhaps make a bit more money on royalties and stuff. Uh-huh. And I thought, I just felt like I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And I decided, so I printed 1,000 CDs. So it's going to be interesting to see how long, you know, like, am I going to have those forever? Because in a year, nobody's going to use them, do you know?
Yeah.
Or will people of a certain age range still use CDs? And a lot of Kirtan fans are a little bit older.
Yeah. And so, it's in Europe, I found people will buy CDs more
except
readily.
Except for Sweden.
Right. Yeah. No one bought my CDs in Sweden.
Did you notice that? Okay. Yeah. Because, you know, that's where Spotify, that's the home of Spotify.
I totally didn't know that.
Yeah. Somebody was telling me that because every year we'd play there and I was thinking, isn't that funny that I, you know, at this one festival that nobody ever buys CDs, but they do at other places.
Yeah.
And somebody standing beside me went, oh, you didn't know that we're the home of Spotify. And I'm like, oh, so that might be part of why.
Yeah. No, they do downloads or stream. They're more advanced, I guess.
They're very advanced. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So the single idea is really good. Like I almost thought of doing that too, like just releasing singles, but something in me wanted the full, like actual album, like in a row, like some, you know, but in the age of Spotify though, people don't hear whole albums typically sometimes, but usually it is single by single for sure. But all my singles came out at once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then the cool thing is that you can, if you release it as a single, then you get consideration for playlists for each single. So it's a strategic thing, you know.
It's so true. It's so true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That way we could only pitch one song because of the album. but what can you do? It's interesting to like kind of learn about all that, the way it goes now.
Yeah. It's a totally new, I mean, it's sort of all that I know, because I think this was sort of starting, well, I guess it's not all I know. I mean, when I was first starting out, it was all about CDs. Yeah.
Which was when, what year was around? Was
well, like singer-songwriter years were like 2007.
Okay. Yeah.
And right. So when were you starting your music career? Well,
are we actually podcasting right now?
We are totally, we're doing it. This is it. Yeah. I just press record.
Hi everybody.
I'll do a little intro about you on the front end.
Well, I think this is fun. I love it. I wasn't sure if we had started or not. That's so great. So I started, now I'll
put on my podcast voice.
Yes. Now you have to be really serious.
That's right.
Really be careful what you say. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to just, yes. Actually, I feel like I'm just going to do yes or no answers. That's okay. No. I actually started doing kirtan I started touring with kirtan in 2008.
Okay.
But I discovered it in 2004. And like first time I ever had heard mantra was 2004, but I had been a singer-songwriter since 1992. So I was doing folk rock, kind of like playing festivals and bars and things like that. Up until I had a band called Julia Propeller in the 90s with my other friend Samantha Wells and some guys. We were named after a fractal. If you know chaos theory, fractal geometry, pretty trippy
thing. Is that worth explaining?
Well, the only thing is, I wouldn't be able to explain it very well, except that it's. A way I could describe it is: do you remember? You would have been a tiny little child at this time, but when computers, like desktop computers, first started coming out. Often the screensaver was this paisley looking moving pattern, like a beautiful moving design that just kind of moving. Like it looked like paisley in a way, but it was, that's something called a fractal. And with the advent of computers, like it's mathematical formulae. And with the advent of computers, they could assign the formulae with, if I'm saying that correctly, with colors. You assign a color to it.
And oh, so, I know. Yes.
You know, and so
from that thing that like iTunes used to do, right? Where you could push a button and it would,
The visualizer. Yes. Yeah. That was either they were fractals or very fractal-like. And so there are all these, it's chaos theory. It's like the idea that there's harmony within chaos. I'm not a good person to explain it other than that I just think it's fascinating, and visually the whole concept of it is amazing. And so the singer that I was co-leading the band with, she is a mathematician. She was studying mathematics, and she brought to my apartment one night this book, and it had these incredible patterns. We're looking through, and we noticed that all the names were really cool too.
I'm going to do this too.
Oh yeah. The mics. I know.
I'm going to hold up my mic too. I don't know where it is. I just realized, but yeah, I think
it's that little bumpy part there.
It's the one with the buttons on it.
Okay. Yep.
I'll do it too.
Okay.
Why not?
Like, you know, it makes us look like we're, you know, being cool or something. anyway, she brought this book. The names were great. And we're like, Julia Propeller, that is the name of a band. So that was our band for a while. And then, 2004, I discovered kirtan, which is a whole story into itself. So you'll have to let me know if you want to know that later.
I do. I want all the stories.
Okay. Well, and so I will go back to that. But between 2004 and 2008, I just dove into trying to learn as much as I possibly could about mantra and kirtan. And I spent a bunch of time in Asia, spent time in India, and was just writing, because I was already a songwriter. I was writing melodies and using
these mantras that I absolutely loved and felt really resonant with, and started, and it basically I had like, I think 50 different songs, and then recorded my first album in 2008 and then started touring with it. So that I've been doing it now for 11 years where that's fully what I do. But still my singer-songwriter life, still the tendency to write English songs and to be like singer-songwriter-ish comes in definitely in my
Well, that's what I loved about the song that I heard. Remind me the title.
So the one that you told me you heard is called Falling Away.
Falling Away.
/ Namah Shivaya. So it's got a lot of English in it and a lot of mantras sort of.
The English words are so powerful. It's about letting go. Did you mean to release this in the fall?
Wow. No. Well, I didn't. I didn't, but I think something else did.
Yeah.
You know, this whole, it's really wild. This album in particular has had such a life of its own. Like it happened so fast. Well, I mean, the songs were written over a few years, but the actual, like, doing the crowdfunding, doing the pre-production, doing the production, doing the manufacturing, doing the artwork, blah, blah, it was like 2.5 months, everything done. And
wow,
released.
That's
and
really
that
sweet.
Is incredibly fast for me. And I always do them. I don't take a lot of time. You know, I don't do sort of the album making that stretches over a lot of time, even though sometimes I think that'd be kind of a neat way to do it. I actually like to go in and do it in like a week or 2 weeks in the studio. But that's so interesting about falling away, being in the autumn and being released. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah.
And the English lyrics. Thank you. I'm glad that they resonate with you. I could tell you the story about that when that was written.
Yeah.
A lot of stories up my sleeve. So that song was written the day after I had this really powerful experience on the lake, on the shores of Lake Huron. I was at my aunt and uncle's cottage. It was in the winter. No, it was in the late winter, very early spring. So it was probably in March, a couple of years ago. And I was sitting on these huge snow drifts, and they were massive, and there were ice and snow. And some of them, you could see, I could see them dripping and melting away. And then I could, every once in a while, a big chunk would just crash down like a boulder into the water and just be this big dramatic, like, and the waves were like, it was a very rough sea, even though it was a lake. I always think of Lake Huron as an ocean, but it was churning. And so these huge boulders were churning, and it was very dramatic. And, but I was noticing that there was that, you know, much more forceful sort of crashing. And then also this slow dripping as well on these other, with this ice. And I was really feeling into how my life is like that, or I am like that, and that there's parts of me that sometimes come crashing off, and sometimes there's like, and when I say me, I mean like this construct of me, or who Brenda is or thinks she is, and then sometimes it just drips away, but eventually it seems that everything's going to fall away. And so the song, the next day, I was just, you know, all the lyrics just started coming. And really, it's about the falling away of a rigid adherence to beliefs or identity, and how even when all of those things that we thought we needed, when they're gone, that there absolutely is this freedom for actual beingness to live from beingness. And it's not like everything stops when there's like, quote unquote, nothing left. Life still moves, and there's still this beingness, as I said. And so this song is about that, and the chorus is falling away. And then we sing to Shiva in the song, Lord of Destruction and Transformation. They just seem to, that mantra really, I knew that's the mantra that goes with this song.
Right, sure. Right. Mm-hmm. I have a similar song. It doesn't sound the same, but it's about, you know, letting go. And then it has an Om Namah Shivaya. I've never recorded it, but
what's it called?
They're very, The music of letting go.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe it's time to.
Maybe it is time, yeah.
And to release it this fall or next fall.
Yeah, I like that. I like the thematic releases.
That's great. Yeah, I really, I like that now that I know that's what happened.
What was the spark for you in mantra? Was it like you discovered yoga, you met a teacher, like what brought you to it?
Well, it was all very much, I don't feel like I was looking for it. I know I was at that time in 2000, it was 2003, 2004. I felt that I was looking for something, but I really didn't know what it was. Like, I didn't even know really what a quote unquote spiritual journey was or anything. I just knew that something was extremely restless in my heart. And for years I would just, I would just do the next fun thing, you know, and I would love to party and go out. And, you know, I was married at the time and we would just host dinner parties and it was just all about like, just, well, it was fun and wonderful, but a lot of action in my life, but I knew something inside me just needed something more. And so I left my marriage and I was, just exploring, a tiny little bit some spiritual things. Like someone had handed me the book Conversations with God. Mm. I don't know. Do you know this?
I haven't, but someone just gave me the children's book of that.
Neat. Okay.
I'm looking forward to reading. Yeah.
Cool. Well, someone handed me that book and I started reading it and I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting, but I don't really, like, it didn't quite resonate, but it kind of did. So there was this little tiny taste of that. And then I went to start doing yoga and purely for the fitness aspect, or so I thought at the time. And so I really wasn't, I was opening very, very slowly into this whole realm of the heart and of the spirit. And so a friend of mine invited me to go to a mantra workshop in London, Ontario. And she thought I would like it because I was a musician and I had just started doing yoga. And so I thought, okay, cool, I'll go. So we went, and I was just telling someone else about this the other day. We got in there and I thought, oh, how cool. It's just this guy named Yogi John from Guelph, Ontario. And there he was. And he had his guitar and a harmonium, which I'd never seen. And he started chanting, started singing, and we started singing back. And I really, the first song, I thought, well, it's kind of interesting, but wow, he just keeps repeating the same thing over and over again. I thought, what is happening here? Like, I'm glad that I was sitting in a place in the room where I would have had to get up and go in front of everyone in order to leave. And there's part of me that didn't want to offend anyone. So I'm glad that was in place at that moment, because I ended up staying, but I really kind of felt like, I gotta get out of here. I don't like this. But by the second song, something happened. And the second song was an Om Namah Shivaya. And something in me, it's almost like something broke open. I just felt like the best I can describe it is that a lightning bolt came down, even though it was much more than that. And I couldn't describe it really, but it was this deep knowing that now I am going to share this kind of music. And even though I didn't, my mind didn't know what it was that I was, being informed, or that I was coming to know that what I was going to do. My mind was like, no, you can't do this. Like, blah, 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 blah. And, but the knowing was so, so profound that it couldn't be argued with. And so I realized, oh, well, I have got a lot of learning to do, a lot, because if I'm going to be sharing this, I better get started. So for the next 4 years, I just really, And now too, I mean, I'm sure you would agree. I mean, there's just, there are lifetimes of things to learn. I mean, mm-hmm. lifetimes and lifetimes. Mm-hmm. So I'm still learning so much, but I just really, like, I just dove in and then, yeah, it just became my life.
That's awesome. Did it feel exciting that you had so much to learn, or did it feel kind of overwhelming at first?
Well, it felt overwhelming to my mind, but because the knowing was so deep, it really held me. Like it didn't matter, and it was exciting. Yeah. Like, because even though I would get doubts and all of that, I wasn't really listening to that. It was just too strong a mm-hmm. knowing. Mm-hmm. Which is great, you know, be great if everything in life was that, was always that clear.
Yeah.
It was, you know, but it's not necessarily always that clear, but that was.
Yeah.
So I was very excited. I couldn't believe the world that was opening up to me, like discovering different artists that have been doing it for a long time, discovering the tradition in India, and mm-hmm. and then finding out about all the Westerners who were doing it. And I mean, it's grown so much since then, so many more people. But I remember, you know, my first people that I knew of were Waugh and mm-hmm. Jayutal and David Newman. And then shortly thereafter, Shantala. And then it just kept growing and growing, and all these inspirations were around for me to learn from. Mm-hmm.
So when I first met you, I think it was the first Bhakti Fest. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so. Is that when I came and I stayed in your apartment?
Yes. Yeah. Must have been that one. Yeah. Because after that, I don't think I lived in Santa Monica. So.
No, that's right. It was when you were in Santa Monica, and I think you weren't there, and I stayed. And that was so sweet of you. And that was probably the first, I don't know if it, you know, it wasn't the first Bhakti Fest, but it was
Second one. It might have been the second one, actually, yeah. Because I think I moved after that, yeah.
Where do you live now?
Yeah. I live in Phoenix.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm going through my own falling away right now, because Hedy Mundur and I are consciously uncoupling.
Okay.
And we've made a little video, and we're going to post it today. So by the time this podcast is released, people will know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
it feels like a good, you know, we feel good about it. Like it's not.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's not that it's not difficult, and there aren't some emotions around it, but yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm gonna look for the video, because that'll be very lovely to see you both talking about what this is like for you and what. Wow, I'll hold you in my heart, both
Thank
of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh.
Yeah, but so that song, that Falling Away, I was like, oh my god, this is so perfect for me right now.
Yes. Oh my god.
I'm gonna not cling to that song, but yeah, just keep bringing it up. It's such an amazing song. Go listen to it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, as well as the entire album, which I'm sure is amazing as well.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, you know, there's a Kundalini mantra on the album.
Oh yeah?
The Adi Shakti.
Oh, nice. Adi
Shakti. Yeah, yeah. Sarva Shakti.
Go ahead. Finish.
Oh no, I was just kind of continuing saying the mantra, but tell me, you probably do have a version of that.
I don't. Well, I do, but I don't have a recorded one. Right. I've done it for like a yoga class or something before, but my friend has a version of this, Andy, and she was telling me that to her, it's about sex. It's this like divine partnership kind of mantra with the, yeah.
Wow. Well,
she feels it's a very passionate kind of sexy mantra.
Yeah. I find it is too, actually. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of that, well, obviously because it's that primal feminine energy, the Shakti, but the Kundalini Mata Shakti, there's something just so, so powerful and very, it's very sensual.
Mm-hmm. There's something, I love the rhythm of that too, the Kundalini Mata Shakti, like it just has like a nice rhythm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. interesting. I mean, you must, I'm assuming you find this too. The mantras kind of just present themselves, you know, like, they either resonate with you in that moment or, you know, or you don't, or they don't.
So yeah. True. It's amazing how they do that. Like suddenly a particular mantra will just keep coming to mind, or I'll hear it more than, you know, or I'll read it somewhere and it just seems to be glowing on the page, you know, standing out from everything else. It's like, oh, that one again. And then it often becomes a song. Yeah. I'll write a melody and that will be the mantra that will go with it.
Yeah. Do you write a lot for yoga classes? Like, will you write a lot of new stuff for yoga classes, or are you?
Like particularly like focused so that it would work in a yoga class, you mean?
I guess.
That kind of thing.
Is that an inspiration?
I have thought of that, but usually it's after the song is written, then I might think, oh, this could be nice in a yoga class. But yeah, I haven't been very strategic exactly in my writing. And I think that, you know, although there has been a feeling of that, oh, I'd love to do just an all Shavasana album at some point. So I have thought of that, but typically, I mean, I was really happy the other day, my friend wrote to me and she said, I used your whole album for my prenatal class. Like we just put it on and we listened from beginning to end during the class and it worked really well, she said. And I thought, wow, that's really cool because it does go, you know, it's slow and then a bit fast and it's a more mellow album than I usually have, but there are some lively elements for sure. So I thought, well, that's great that it worked in the album, you know, as an album in album form.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think most yoga teachers make playlists, so they usually select.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think in the Kundalini yoga community too, like some of the Kriyas, a lot of the Kriyas will specify this mantra needs to be sung or played. So I've had to, you know, come up with like, all right, I don't have one for this. I guess we're writing one, you know, before the class sort of thing.
Of course, that would make sense in the Kundalini tradition even more. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's more need based, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. And then just to be able to work with a particular mantra when you're writing it, it can go in really deep for your, in for your own healing and your own, like when you're really sitting with it for a long time as you craft that, it's a real gift.
Yeah. Hmm. Where are you right now? Are you at home or are you traveling?
Yes. So I'm home and I just walked in the door a half an hour before we got on our call from, I left the Catskill Mountains last night. I played at a festival called Ahimsa.
Oh, fun. I have friends who were there. Yeah.
Oh, did you? Oh, great. Well, they're there. And I was there with, you know, Ajit was there and Mirabai Seba and Jayu Tal and the Hanuman and Jonavi Harrison was there. I know I'm forgetting.
I just had Suka on my podcast and they were there.
Oh my gosh, I love them. And they're actually in, so I'm in Toronto. I just walked into Toronto, but Suka just came to Waterloo and Hamilton, which are two cities right near Toronto.
Oh, cool.
So we were talking as they were leaving. They're like, we're on our way to Canada. So, yeah, they're wonderful. I love them. Yeah. So I just walked in. I drove halfway yesterday, stayed overnight near Ithaca, and then drove the rest of the way today. So I'm at home for about, a day.
Get a whole day.
An entire day. And then on Wednesday I drive to London, Ontario, which is only 2 hours away. Mm-hmm. And I have a 6-day kirtan and mantra course that I teach. It's the seventh year. And we have about 25 people coming together and we do so many wonderful fun things. We go in really deep with mantra and then we form bands and everybody writes songs, they write melodies to the mantras and they present it. And it's a highlight of my year. So that starts on Wednesday.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I was once in Northern California right before Jayu Tal's like I can't remember what it's called, but he has like a summer band camp or something like that.
He does. It's called Kirtan Camp, I believe.
Kirtan Camp, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I have friends who've attended that.
It sounds kind of like, sounds kind of like that. I like that.
Well, yeah, I feel like Jai and David Newman has Kirtan College. Oh, okay. Sean Johnson has, I think it's called Kirtan Immersion. And, you know, these guys, are such big inspirations for me. So I definitely feel truly inspired by them when it comes to so many things, but also doing this kind of a program. And I attended actually David's Kirtan College back in 2008. I was his assistant and also learning and attending as well. So got some great ideas. Thanks, David. It was wonderful.
Yeah. That's awesome. Do you like playing in Canada? Like, what do you find is the difference between your Canadian tours and your American tours? Are there?
No, I mean, I don't find that there really is much of a difference other than I play more in the U.S. You know, I was saying to somebody even just yesterday, the U.S. has 10 times more people than Canada or more.
I did not realize that.
Mm-hmm. We have, I don't know the latest census, the latest population of Canada, but it's probably around 33 million.
Okay.
And so what do you have?
Wow. Now? I have no idea. I'm not
over
a statistics person.
Over 300. I know, yeah. Me neither. But some people who are listening will know the exact numbers. I think I'm safe to say it's about 10 times more.
Wow. Yeah.
And so, So when I come to the U.S., so say I go to play in New England, then there's just much more of a population to draw from in terms of our audience.
Right.
So we're able to have more people come out to the events. But here as well, I mean, I live in the most densely populated part of Canada, and that's southwestern Ontario. So we're in between the Great Lakes, like it dips down. We're in a very southern part of Canada. A lot of the U.S. is actually north of us. It's kind of my thing. I like to tell people about that because, you know, yeah, I have to drive up north to go to Maine or Vermont, or I have to fly north to go to Minneapolis.
Oh, okay. You
know? Yeah. We're really far south. And so this is really densely populated. So I tend to do most of my Canadian playing in Ontario, southwestern Ontario, to be exact.
Yeah.
But I want to get more out to BC and the Atlantic provinces. I'd love to do more of that. But the U.S. and Europe seem to be where I get drawn to the most right now.
Yeah. Well, you got to go where you're being asked, right?
It's true. Yeah.
I was curious because I remember talking with Mirabai Seba, Marcus, and Angelica when they were in town here, and they really love playing in Canada. So I was just curious
we love them here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it too. Yeah. I know that Toronto really loves Mirabai Seba. I mean, who doesn't, right? But, you know, we were just all together at IHIMSA. I just love them so much. There's a real, you know, Sonatum just has amazing audiences here in Toronto as well. I think she played here last week. Mm-hmm. And just people absolutely adore it. So I feel really lucky to be in a city where there's a really great appreciation of mantra and kirtan. Mm. So yeah, and actually I'm let me put in a little plug for my Toronto event.
Yeah,
because it's extra special. I have I get the chance to do a double bill kirtan with David Newman here on November 16th, and we're going to do a workshop the next day, so it's pretty awesome.
Awesome. I will put that in the description of this
thank
podcast.
You. Yeah.
And try to release it before that.
Fun. Well, whenever.
Totally possible. That's totally possible. So you tour most of the year? Or
I do.
Yeah.
I tend to. Yeah, I do. There are times, you know, I think it's January, February, I tend to not, but then I usually go to India because I lead a retreat there every year. So I'm doing one. I'll let people who are listening know about this too. We're doing, we call it our Bhakti pilgrimage in South India. And we go to Oroville, and Oroville is an international community in Tamil Nadu. It's an amazing, really amazing community. And we go there, we do kirtan and yoga and go to a lot of different temples and explore South Indian culture. And then we're going to Tiruvannamalai, which is where Ramana Maharshi lived and where his ashram was built up around him, Ramana Ashram. So we're going there in February, but I tend to in January just not really play very much. I'm doing a little bit, but it tends to be a little. And December is a little bit quieter as well.
Rest up.
Yeah, then I'm realizing more and more how important that is. I mean, I get, when I'm on tour, like sometimes people say to me, how do you do it? How do you do it? And I think, well, I think the nature, and you could probably relate to this, the nature of what we're doing is healing. And so I'm receiving the benefits of these mantras all the time. Like it's such a blessing, but I also really, I forget sometimes that I need to rest as well as, you know, receive these benefits. I'm getting those, but then they help me along for sure. But,
or maybe just have the time to integrate it.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very true. My nature has always been to just go, 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 go. And, you know, I turned 50 last year and I, there is something to be said about, you know, as we get older, we go into like different stages. And it feels like I'm just slightly more insular than I used to be. I still love to be with people and to have new experiences, but it's just not as much of a drive. So I'm trying to like spend a little bit more time at home.
Yeah.
And you know, even if it's just a week or two, and then go out and be able to share again.
Yeah, it's funny. I think the opposite is happening for me, where I spent so much of my life being this really introverted person, which kept me from wanting to tour very much, honestly. Right. And then now discovering this other part of myself and being like, oh, I can show up and not be drained. And this is actually fun. You know,
isn't that cool?
Yeah.
That is really, really interesting how that works, and to just follow that and not to like force oneself one way or the other. I think it's important. So that's great that you're feeling that draw and now it's time.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Good. So you're going to come tour and come play in Toronto then, right?
Yes, sure. Great. Talk with my manager about that.
Yes.
No, I think I almost did go up to Canada last summer. I was invited, but it was like too short notice.
Oh, where were you going to
plan these things in advance? I think it was going to be in the Quebec kind of area. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it might have been Toronto, actually. True. There was this woman who really wanted me to come, and you know how it is. It just like, it didn't work out easily.
So. That's right. Wasn't the right timing or whatever. Yeah. Well, keep me updated.
There's much time. Yeah.
There is. We never know. You know, just never know what's around the corner.
No,
that's true. Amazing. Such a beautiful mystery, all of it.
It definitely keeps your interest.
It really does. It really does. It's like life itself is like, I used to look for these like more like peak kind of experiences. Mm. And now I'm just like, wow, everything is amazing. Like, and I don't mean that I walk around like kind of in this blissful, like awestruck state all the time, but there's more of a fascination with the ordinary actually being quite fascinating. And I'm really glad for that. Being able to see that.
Yeah. One of my teachers, I was asking about vibration. You know how people always say like high vibration, whatever. I was like, what does that really look like? Is it higher pitched or like volume or like what does that mean? And the way that they explained it was, this was like a channeled answer, so it's they, but it was like you notice, basically your sensitivity is greater. So colors are more vivid, taste is more vivid, you know, your hearing's more vivid, like you experience so much more. So that makes sense that you would do all this mantra music, you would raise your vibration, and then things that other people would just totally take for granted and not even notice would be
Right. Yeah, it's awesome. It's like, that's great. And it's like life itself, it is noticed for what it really is. Like the vibrancy of it is experienced instead of it being kind of deadened or not noticed. You know, like when the mind isn't constantly chattering, then the vibration appears to be higher when actually it just is what it always was. Just we notice it.
Right.
We really get it now. You know, it's like, oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Tuning into like the actual reality.
The actual reality. Yeah. Yeah. What really is. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Mantras really help us to uncover that or remember it.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Powerful little guys.
Oh, it's beyond truly how powerful mantra is, those sound formulas. I mean it's hard to describe until one actually does it and experiences it. It's like you can't really describe it, right?
Right. Right. No. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's always that, like, you could be the person like you in the beginning and be like, this is really repetitive. Right. Or you could be the next version of you and be like, wah, you know.
Exactly. I know. And it's really,
or somewhere in between.
Yeah. And I like that. I at first had that experience, 'cause I can relate when I think maybe they might be feeling that, you know, mm-hmm. if we're in a workshop or something, I'm going to tell that story, and I can tell, like, some people like, oh, right. 'Cause I know I definitely was feeling that. And I think some people can jump into kirtan and mantra really easily. And some it takes a little bit of time, and it's important just to really, ease in and be okay with how long it might take. And I actually know a man who, I guess it wasn't until like his third kirtan that he actually wanted to be there, but he kept, like, he came with a friend the first time and just really hated it, and or thought he did anyway, and then came again and he's like, what am I doing here again? And then the third time it was like he started going, oh, this is why. So something kept pulling him back. It's like being inexplicably drawn. I've definitely heard people talk about that. It's like, I don't know why, but I keep coming back, and then they realize why.
Right. Like, why do I keep tasting this thing? Am I gonna develop a taste for it?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Often they do.
Yeah. Well, they say with children too, you know, like they won't like something necessarily on the first try. They'll have to try it a few times, you know?
Yes.
Exactly. Build a relationship to it. But
yeah,
that's so funny. I remember the first kirtan I ever heard was Sean Johnson.
Oh.
And the Wild Lotus Band. And I don't even remember being cognizant of the fact that they were repeating the same thing over and over again.
Right.
I was just
got right into it.
I just got totally, I was like, oh my God, take me. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, amazing.
Like, I'm in. Yeah. It was cool.
You just dove in right away. You know, this might be a nice time to mention that Sean Johnson and the Wild Lotus Band have their Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign. And it might still be on at the time when you bring this podcast on. So it's going to be an incredible album. So if anybody's listening and they haven't yet contributed, go and find it. I think it's on Indiegogo. You can find info on Facebook too.
Yeah. I love the crowdsourcing thing. Two of my albums I did that for. It's so nice because you get to be part of the creation of it. I've heard people just really enjoy being part of the process, you know, in some way.
I know. It truly is a beautiful, it's like hearkening back into another time or something, even though we're using technology to do it, but it's like, it really is. It's the whole community coming together to do something together. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. It's like, it can be harrowing for the artist. I'm like, what? Are we going to make it? Like, there's all this stuff that comes up, or different fears, or different, but then all of the support and the love is just so affirming and assuring. And yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I just finished my crowdfunding and I had like 375 people took part, and wow. I just think it just blows me away. You know, the generosity of people, and just the people's willingness to buy an album before it's even been made, and yeah. and to want it to happen. It's just, it's like, oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. I'm very grateful for that platform. I remember hearing about it back in Peru in like 2012 or something. A friend there said, oh, there's this thing we're doing in South America. No, this was even earlier than that. But anyway, and it's called crowdfunding. And I'm like, crowdfunding? What? That is such a cool concept. And I forget what year it was, but it really hadn't taken off here. And now it really has.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great concept.
Yeah, around the time when I did it was 2011, and I think it was fairly
well, okay. So this was
known at that point. So it probably was before. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's just I don't know. It also just takes such a pressure off of the artist, because you've already recouped your album. I mean, which is,
I know,
it's just crazy.
You know? It really is. It's such a gift to the artist. You know, my first two albums, I borrowed money to do it. So I was paying back that money for years. And it was great. It was very generous of the people who lent me the money, and the interest wasn't very high. But it took a long time, and everything that I made went back to paying them back, of course, but it was really hard to even at all make any kind of living and pay my rent. You
right.
know? So,
right.
So now,
I'm not many people realize how much albums cost.
No, I know. And when you really want to make a good quality album, mm-hmm. you know, it costs a lot of money. I have a very expensive taste when it comes to the studios I work in and the mastering. I go to Gateway Mastering in Maine, and they're not cheap, and they are the best. They are amazing. and I know why it's not cheap.
Yeah.
And it's worth every penny, but the work they do just stands out so much, makes it for such a beautiful sonic experience for the listener, and it's really worth it. And being able to pay people to play on the album, there's so much that goes into it that it seems like this magical thing that just appears, and it is magical.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of little things and things that go on for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. So congratulations on completing yours, and
thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. It's exciting. It's in a way, you know, it's like, it's my baby. It's my fifth kirtan baby.
Oh,
yeah, I have a family of five now. I have other albums, but though, you know, these are the ones that are, they're my bhakti babies.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're big investments, and they
have a life of their own.
My last album before the sound healing one I was telling you about was minus eight, and it took exactly 9 months to release it. A little closer to 10, but my pregnancies have been closer to 10 months anyway.
That is amazing. I think I remember that, am I imagining this, or did I know that there was this correlation between your album coming out and your baby being born? I don't know. I might be
my second album I made, or I recorded right after the birth of my first son. Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, which was, if I had known what having a newborn was like, I probably would not have planned it that way. But, you know, I'm pregnant and we're in pre-production. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just record the vocals after I give birth. No problem.
Yes. But you got it done. It happened.
Got it done. Yes. It was a crowdsourcing one, and I had like a deadline that I really wanted to make.
Yes. Right.
So wow. Yeah. It's good. I think sometimes deadlines are very positive because otherwise you can fiddle with it for an indefinite amount of time.
Yes, it's true. I work very well with deadlines for sure. I mean, I did my last album before this one, Chidananda. This one is called Chidananda. And the last one, My Heart Bows Down to You, there were 4 years between them. And so I wouldn't have wanted any kind of deadline around, we need to make another album, because I needed that time for it just to gestate and develop. But once I decided to do it, then deadlines were my friends. Like, really, it was great. Yeah.
Awesome. Wonderful. Well, if people want to find out more about Brenda McMorrow, where should they go?
Well, they could, the thing about Google is you can just put somebody's name in and then you find it out. But to go specifically to my website is good. And that's brendamcmorrow.com. And then on Spotify, just putting in Brenda McMorrow is the way to go. So really the albums are all on any platform out there, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Unless one has popped up recently that we haven't heard about.
Has anyone contacted you? Someone contacted me a few months ago and said, I can't find your music on Napster. And I was like, Napster?
Napster's still like this? Actually, I think I saw that. I wonder. We better make sure we're on Napster.
Make sure you're on Napster.
That's right. I think it's a new way of doing it. Remember, it was free before?
Yeah, I think it's more like a streaming thing. Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Okay, yeah, let's make sure we're on Napster. I'm sure we are now. You're probably on there now.
I think I am now, yeah. I had to hit something in my CD Baby thing to make that
right.
happen.
Right, okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's amazing how far and wide and all these different ways of sharing music. All right. At first I was resisting streaming like crazy. And then now it's like, you know what? There's no point in that. This is part of what we do.
Happening.
You know? Yeah, it's happening and things evolve and change. And I know that for me, I discover a lot of amazing artists on streaming platforms. Mm-hmm. And then often I'll buy the music after that. But I get to hear people. Mm-hmm.
It's so millennial, you know, like the sharing aspect of it. I really love where you can be like, I just heard this song and send someone a link and, you know.
Yes. It's amazing. I love getting a text from a friend. Like, I have a few friends that I just love their taste in music, and I see a text coming through and there's a link. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to hear something so good right now. So it is great. It's great. Yeah.
Wonderful. Cool. Well, thank you for joining me. Thank you for coming on and chatting.
This is great. I'm so glad you're doing this. Do you have a bunch of people lined up?
It's fun. Yeah, I do. I have a lot of editing to do.
I won't
actually edit the talking part, but you know, I put like a little intro in the front.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm really honored to have been asked by you to be here.
I'm honored that you said yes.
Wow. Well, I'm going to be thinking about you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Have a great retreat.
Thank you very much. I look forward to when we get to see each other in person.
Yes, me too. Yeah.
Great. Thanks so much, Sergan.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Everything I thought I had been, everything.
only thing that can be seen is a figment now of what it had been. Just one thing now that I could be. What it is beyond description. Really is no form or thing. All that lent my heart protection. Everything I thought I'd need is falling away. Falling away. Falling away. Falling.
You can hear the full version of that song on iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, anywhere music is streamed or downloaded online, as well as on Brenda's CD, Chidananda, at her shows and on her website. So thanks for joining us, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.